Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Howdy, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 13th, 2011, episode 118, sponsored by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Guess what? It's Wednesday.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
We have a show on Wednesday.
It's true.
It's time to go out to the barn. Let him out and work my arm. It's kind of like a meditation. Sort of like yoga, my religion. I get in a trance-like state as I pitch and as I race. The smell of manure and sweet grass hay. What a beautiful way to start your day. I'm 5 foot, but I never feel as tall as when I'm cleaning stalls.
I love the Wednesday opener, Jamie. I like that one.
Guess
I
what?
I think that one's a good one. What?
It's Wednesday.
I know. It's Wednesday. Over the hump day. You know, it seems like it was just Monday. That's the thing about Wednesday. So, did you hear about the guy? Go ahead.
I was going to say, did it finally stop raining in Lexington?
Yeah,
it did. Everybody is flooded.
4.5 inches of rain here in a day. So it was pretty flooded, and now my grass is going to grow, and I can't get my lawnmower started. It's like, oh, geez, I'm going to have to borrow a lawnmower just to mow the lawn before we have to bale it. Or I have to try and get the lawnmower started. And me working on, like, engines and things isn't so good. That's not a good plan. Never works out
very
well.
No, I would imagine. You know, you could just do the weed eater tactic. You could just take the weed eater out and just start leveling it off. That's what I've seen my neighbor do with their little postage stamp of grass. And I'm like, really? A weed eater? That's how you're cutting your grass? But that's how it works for them.
Jennifer thinks that the Amish have it right and that we should go that route. We used to always see in Lancaster County, used to see the Amish kids used to be the ones in charge of mowing the lawns. And they used to have big lawns. They would hook a pony. They didn't use the motorized lawnmowers. They used those ones that had the big wheel that went around. Do you know what I mean? The push ones that were just a wheel that went around and chopped the grass.
Yes.
They would hook a pony to it. And they would mow the lawn with the pony and that little manual lawnmower, and that's how they would go around the grass. It was so cute to watch, and that's how Jennifer thinks we should do it here.
I think that would work. I think that would work absolutely. I don't have that problem here.
Yeah, you have 3 blades of grass in the whole place.
And, man, I talk to them and I whisper to them and I'm like, please grow. I love you. So that's what I have to do here.
So anyway, did you see or hear about that guy with the bomb in his wall?
What?
So this old guy, 70-year-old, he was refurbishing his bathroom, and he ripped out the plaster, and he was taking the insulation out of the wall. This was an upper Midwest someplace. He was taking the insulation out of the wall, and out came a bomb, a 20-inch-long bomb with a 5-inch warhead on it, Well, his wife came in and said, "What'd you find?" And he's standing there holding a bomb with four fins and everything. And
oh my gosh!
His wife said, "Well, is it real?" And they weren't sure if it was real. So just to be on the safe side, they brought it outside and they put it down. And then they called the police, and she went back to doing the dishes, and he went back to remodeling the bathroom. And the police show up and are like, "Are you kidding me?" And they evacuated the whole block. Called in the bomb squad. They took it to the bomb range, and they blew it up on the bomb range. And apparently, it made such an explosion that it was heard all over town.
Wow!
That's how live this bomb was. So not only did he have a bomb in his wall, it was a live bomb that had been there since the Korean War. Apparently, the people who lived there before him were Korean War vets, and they brought back souvenirs from the Korean War. You know. Souvenirs are like lighters and, you know, things like that. Not a freaking
shot
bomb.
Well, and then the other thing is, how exactly do you bring a live bomb home from the Korean War? You dig, you know, you pull down your wall, you put it in there, and first of all, why would you do that with a live bomb? Put it in your wall, and then you shore it up, and then you move away. Does one forget that you have a live bomb on your wall?
I think I've got this figured out. I had to dwell on this a lot last night while trying to sleep. The person who brought the bomb home has a deep-seated disgust with contractors and persons in the house-building trades. He had a very bad experience as a child. So when he gets home, he has this bomb, and he's going to put it in the wall, knowing eventually the bathroom's going to have to get redone. You redo bathrooms. Because he was just going to blow up the first house repair dude that came into that wall. It was just his secret desire to get back at somebody.
It is darn lucky, you know, when you tear out a wall, a plaster wall, you use a hammer and a crowbar, and you rip the thing out. So, you know, if he was banging at the wrong, could he have? I probably could have. And by the way, there's a lot of bad jokes there, too, about the fact that it was in the bathroom and explosive and all that. A lot of bad jokes there, too, which I'll avoid. But
you would never do bad jokes, Glenn.
No, I would never do bad jokes on this show. So I'm going to avoid those. Just wanted you to think about them a little bit. But anyway, the other thing is, okay, so you find a bomb in the wall, and, you know, probably you assume it's not live, but it's heavy, like a bomb. And he carries it outside. First of all, I'd be gently setting it down and running like hell, like three blocks, till I called the police.
I don't think I'd have put it outside. I think I just evacuated my house and called the police. I would have thought it was the same thing, like that it wasn't even real. So anyway, this is what you were talking to my husband about on the phone yesterday, isn't it? He didn't even tell me this story.
Yes, it is. This is what I was talking to him about yesterday. Yep, that's the story. It's all over the news now, and I just thought it was one of those bizarre ones. But anyway, let's talk about horses. Jennifer, what's coming up?
On today's show, we've got Shauna Koresh, who we're going to start out with, on how to terrorize every horse in the barn in the name of research. No, not really. What we're going to be chatting with Shauna about is de-spooking your horse. And being the research nut that she is, some of her adventures on working through some different ways to de-spook your horse using on-target training. So, folks, she does love to answer questions from listeners. So if you want to call in the 9:30 hour or post your question on Facebook, we'll do our best to get to it. And then after a few minutes of mindless banter and stupid headlines, we'll be hitting up thehorse.com for our regular Wednesday horse health report. And once again, will Christie be able to gross out Glenn, or will Jamie keep asking questions until we run out of airtime?
I don't think they have a chance of grossing me out after last night, because last night I was just looking around and I thought, well, I'll stop over to that stupid site we found yesterday. By the way, that what's it called again? Mare something?
Marestare.com.
Marestare.com, which is not a stupid site unless you're a horse husband, and happen to go there when somebody's having a baby.
Stop. Are you serious?
Yes. So I wasn't so happy yesterday. It's not horse husband approved. It's kind of gross, actually. So it's definitely not horse husband approved. I actually helped deliver, one baby or two babies, Jennifer, in my lifetime?
One,
and that was
one.
Enough.
Yeah, you missed. You really made an extra effort. And actually, I think a little bit fooled us both. She didn't tell anybody she was going to have a kid. We just came out the next morning and went, oh, look what's there.
No. So I get to see my pony have a baby. My ace driving pony, who we're going to have a story about here in a minute. But my ace driving pony having her baby, and, of course, the baby's too big, and Jennifer has to help pull it out and everything. And I'm going, that was just extra not horse husband approved, let me tell you. That was just queasy time.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I think breeding is kind of gross myself.
Let's do our daily Winnie. First one goes to a happy birthday to our friend Tony, who is Darcy's boyfriend, who has our barn where we keep our horse. And, you know, he works the night shift and gets home about, what, 4 or 5 in the morning, Jennifer, and then goes to bed. So Darcy has a special request that we call and wake him up to wish him a happy birthday.
Oh, don't do it. Oh,
don't do it.
So he works nights, and now he gets home at 5 a.m., and it's his birthday, and you're going to call him at 6?
Well, no, it's 9 here.
It's 9 here.
Oh, it's 6 here. Well, that's still doesn't miss 4 hours if he went straight to bed. I think that is cruel.
I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll compromise. We'll call him at the end of the show. That'll give him an extra hour and a half sleep.
Oh, that's actually better. Okay, let's do that.
All right, we'll do that. All right, let's go to our next daily Winnie. Do you want to do this one?
No, I got one.
Okay, Laura Sue Stewart, first time I think I remember her posting on our page. By the way, thank you to everybody. We had an active Facebook page yesterday at Horses in the Morning. Just go there if you want to follow along. Everybody was posting over there yesterday. And she says, not sure whether anyone responded about the versatility horse contest at Equine Affair in Ohio that Jennifer and I were at over the weekend, but the winner was Lori Montgomery riding the mule. Also about
Willie. Willie the mule.
Willie the Mule. Well, that's kind of cool that a mule won.
Isn't that funny?
Also about the Pasofino performance. I love Pasos, but this demo feature during Fantasia was really bad. Nothing about what they were doing was explained. So if you're not familiar with the breed, there was no way of knowing why they were doing what they were doing. So I wasn't being mean and cruel. She backs me up here. There was just no explanation. It was just these little horses going across the board. So thank you to Laura for backing me up there and making me not look mean. By the way, did you know we had that many Pasofino fans in our audience? I didn't know.
I think it's awesome. I love Pasofinas. They are so comfortable to ride. And, yeah, I love that fact that everybody jumped to your defense. Yeah, nobody knew what was going on. They were just trotting across a board. Thank you so much, Laura, for explaining it.
Yes. And thank you to everybody else who posted about Pasofinos. I now know more than I ever did. We're just definitely going to have to get some Pasofino people on now and chat about that. Here's yours, Jamie.
Well, this daily Winnie is kind of self-serving. It goes out to my horse, Jet, the thoroughbred rescue horse that I've now had for about a year and a half and have actually been able to ride for the last 90 days. Because he had so many issues and problems and baggage. Well, yesterday was the day that horse husbands need not listen, but horse women completely understand it was absolutely time to do some sheath cleaning. I mean,
do we have to hear about sheath cleaning first thing in the morning?
Just quit listening for a minute, and Jennifer, I'll talk to you. Because you
know, la 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 la
when you have to do the sheep cleaning, you know, you get all your stuff together, you get your Excalibur out, you get your little cotton, and you get your bucket, and then you, you know, you basically put on your crash helmet and your cross-country vest, because
yep.
you never know how it's going to go. Either they're going to try to kill you, which in that case, I thought, okay, I'll just have to have the vet out here to do it, but I'll give it a try, I'll be tough. Or they're going to, you know, I don't know what he was going to do. He doesn't like being groomed. He doesn't like having his mane pulled. He doesn't like having his feet picked. He doesn't like anything. So I knew he was going to try to kill me. So I get up there and I'm like, all right, here we go. And fortunately he was like dropped, you know, I'm like, okay, I got my gloves on. Let me just touch him for a second. Touch him, I back up. And he just stood there. And I go to touch his sheath and I back up. And then he just stood there.
Did you take a video of that?
No, heck no. So then I grab some of the water, you know, in the cotton, and I'm like, all right, let me just, like, smack him with some water up there and see what happens. I'm like, whoosh, and he just stood there. So then I'm like, all right, spray with the hose up in there and see what happens. Shh, nothing. He's, like, asleep in the cross ties. I'm like, this might be easy. So then I proceed to begin the sheath cleaning. I'm not kidding you. About 30 seconds in, I realize I need to dim the lights and get a bottle of wine because my horse, honest to God, thought the sheath cleaning was the greatest thing that he had ever experienced in his entire life. I feel dirty. I had to shower right afterwards. It was horribly disgusting. I have never had a horse respond to sheath cleaning that way in my entire life.
You deserve
so
it.
So given the options, you prefer the try to kill you?
Almost. Yeah, I think I would, actually, because I was thinking, I was like, oh, my God, what if my neighbors see this? My cross ties are exposed. I'm like, this is going to be bad. Somebody's going to call the police. This horse is loving having, I mean, I had to, like, fish around. I got, like, a golf ball-sized bean out of it, and he's like, thank you. This is so fun. He's, like, lifting his back leg and, like, leaning into me. I'm like, no, this is so horrible. So I get the whole thing done. I hose him off. I put him back. I go, you know, like, cleanse my soul because I just am so horrified by the whole thing. And then, of course, my husband comes home and he's like, so what'd you do today? How on earth do you explain to a non-horse husband that you cleaned your horse's penis? And he liked it.
I think we need, that's a whole new website. You know how we have mare fair? We can have sheath cleaning fair.
Oh, unfortunately, those websites are probably out there already.
Oh, my God. If anybody's had that experience, please tell me I'm not alone. That was absolutely horrible. Horrible. One of my friends said that track horses must have it done a lot because her thoroughbred doesn't mind it either. But I don't think that he enjoyed it quite as much as my horse did. It was the fastest sheath cleaning I've ever done to just try to stop. Like, I got to get out of here. This is terrible.
And I thought I was going to be grossed out.
I didn't know Gelding had that in them. I didn't know they could do the things that he did. I'm done. I'm done talking about it. I've got to forget the whole thing ever happened.
Brenda thinks it's funny, too. Thank you, Brenda. Just posted on Facebook, spitting my coffee all over my laptop. LOL, RE sheath cleaning.
Oh, yeah. Brenda. I'm definitely paying the $25, $30. I don't care what the vet charges from now on. He will be doing the sheath cleaning. I am never doing that again with this horse. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Moving on.
Hey, we're doing Really Bad Ads again on Friday. We need entries for the Really Bad Ads segment we do every Friday at 10 o'clock. So we want you to look through Craigslist in your local area or the areas around you and email Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. And we got a couple in yesterday of some really bad ads that you see there, whether they're funny or they're just totally misspelled. We're going to give you an example here. I actually took the sound file from the one that we did before. We did one 2 weeks ago. We weren't here last Friday, so it was 2 weeks ago on April 1st, actually, that we did this. And it was the winning ad, and it was just the way Jamie did it. I got to tell you, Brenda, you're going to need more coffee because you're going to want to spit out some more when you hear how Jamie read this ad. So here it is.
Well, here's what I'm going to do, Glenn. This should go on the best of Craigslist, like, of all time. I'm going to read it to you as she meant to write it in her head. Or his head. And then I'm going to read it to you the way they actually read it. Because you wouldn't understand it if I just read it to you the way it is. I need to translate it first. And I speak Craigslist. So it's no problem. Here's the actual ad. Hello, everyone. I have a sweet horse that I'm selling. He's a white Arab. He's around 9 years old. And he's about 16 hands. Yes, he is broke to ride, but he probably should have some experience. His feet have been trimmed, he's been clipped, he's wormed, and his teeth have been done. He is an easy keeper, and he loves attention, and he loads up in a horse trailer very easy. I'm asking $600 for him or trade. If you would like a picture, feel free to email me and ask me for pics of him. Does need an experienced rider. If you have more questions, feel free to call me at this number, blah, blah, blah. Thank you. How'd I do?
That translation was very
good.
That was
good. A good ad.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, that was good.
No.
I buy that horse.
Yeah, that was terrific. I don't know what was wrong with that ad.
That was a great ad. Now I'm going to read it to you the way that they wrote it. And, yeah, I'll just go for it. Hewall, everyone. I have a sweet horse that I'm sailing. He is a white Arati. He is 9 years old. He stands about 15'4". Yes, he is bork to ride. You have to have a experience ride on he. He had his feet term and clip. He has been bee worm and his teeth too. He is an easy keeper. He loves the attention. He load up in a horse trailer easy. I am asked $600 for him. I will trade something too. If you want pick of horse, feel free to email me and ask for pics of him. Need an experienced rider. If you have more questions, feel free to call. Thank you. Thank you. I'm here all week. I am here all week.
Hey, we're back live. That was Jamie. Reading the winner of the first really bad ad entries from a couple of weeks ago. You did a great job with that, by the way.
That ad had the most obscure, random question marks in it. Like, he is bork to ride? Like, what? Why did he do that? And I think, Glenn, I might have found one that tops that.
Oh, then, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's just impressive. So go to your local Craigslist.com. Go to whatever equine ads. I find that Craigslist has the most variety of people. I mean, like I said, I'm going to give this as an example again. Well, one person said they would trade their Percheron for another horse or guns. I mean, just random stuff like that. It doesn't have to be misspellings. It can be just... I've got one that Chad actually found. My husband actually found this one and thinks it's so funny, so I will share that with you as well. Find some local ads. Everybody from all over the world has a place that they go to find really stupid, really bad advertisements. And again, these people are trying to sell these horses, and they are doing a very poor job. So find those. Email them, jennifer@horseradionetwork.com.
And we had one submitted. It doesn't have to be just horse ads. We actually had one submitted that was in a magazine or a catalog, Jennifer?
It was a print ad of some type, a sales flyer.
It was a sales flyer for a tack shop, and one of the ads was very funny. We're going to read that one, too, on Friday. So it doesn't has to be horse-related.
I found an advertisement for somebody who wants to teach you riding lessons, and this person needs some special lessons themselves, and we'll get into that on Friday again because... Wow, it was impressive. It was impressive.
Hey, I have send those emails with those ads to jennifer@horseradionetwork.com and put really bad ads in the subject line so she knows that's what it's for. We're going to have a prize for the winner again on Friday, and we'll let you know what that is coming up. Now, Jamie, we years ago used to belong to the Red Rose Driving Club, and we had our little pony, the one that had the baby I was talking about earlier. And she was the best driving pony ever. Well, one of the drives that we did was in Philadelphia. And, you know, we're always picking on the British about their horses getting loose. Well, listen to this little TV report from Philadelphia from yesterday.
It was a wild scene on City Avenue this afternoon. Fox 29 cameras were there shooting video for a completely different story when things just got a little crazy. It started when a horse got on the loose and some modern-day cowboys started springing into action. Fox 29's Chris O'Connell and photojournalist Dave Edwards were there for the whole thing. Chris, what happened out there?
Well, first of all, we're on City Avenue, Joyce, and I'll tell you, if you know City Avenue, you know there's a lot of traffic. No surprise you see a traffic jam or two out here. We were out shooting video for another story, as you said, photographer and I. Dave Edwards and I were out here, and we literally had to do a double take at what we saw causing this traffic jam.
Never seen nothing like that.
It wasn't your normal Sunday drive.
Oh, my God.
As a matter of fact, it wasn't a drive at all.
Pretty crazy, yeah.
No, it was more like a gallop. Trotting right down Belmont Avenue, a horse got loose from its owners while trail riding in Fairmount Park. The horse, Flo, had other ideas.
Running through the street, running through the sidewalk. So the guy over there was blowing his horn. They was blowing their horn. I guess they were telling people to, you know, move out the way, watch out.
Caught on tape by photographer Dave Edwards, we join in the chase.
There's a loose horse, and I'm wondering where the rider is. I'm wondering if the rider's back there somewhere.
It turns out the young rider fell off, and Flo took off under one horsepower. She was finally corralled by some good Samaritans just before trotting onto City Avenue.
We actually got him to slow down right here at the gas station, and I yelled it, and the horse actually stopped.
Then in came the cavalry. The owners say the horses, stabled in North Philadelphia, got spooked and didn't stop.
We're coming from Strawberry Mansion. Unfortunate mishap. Rider got dumped, and thanks to some good Samaritans, we got our horse back.
Luckily, no one was hurt, and all of the horses rode into the sunset. And we did check with Philadelphia police. Believe it or not, it's completely legal to have a horse as long as there is a rider on top of it through the streets of Philadelphia. Luckily, this was an accident. No one will be cited in this incident, Joyce.
Well, Chris, do we know if Flo...
So there we go. That's in Fairmount Park. We actually did a drive in Fairmount Park with our pony, and the hard part about Fairmount Park is we had to park across the street and down the block a little bit. You heard the traffic. This is a major city street. So we had to take our carriage to a stop sign to make a left with all this traffic around and then get into the park. The park's beautiful, and it's a linear park, so it goes forever. And we were actually racing other ponies. It was a blast. Because there's a road that goes through this park, but getting to the park was the feat. I thought it was interesting. Does horse, horn blowing always helps a loose horse calm down, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It really does. Nothing says calm down like honking and screaming and
screaming.
Cameras and people chasing you. Yeah, good times. And I love I love the non-horse people that come on and comment about the horses because the language is poor. They have no idea. They don't speak horse. It's just hilarious. And there was some horse. I think it was a horse. I never seen one of those before. Really?
If you watch the video, this horse was running right down the middle of the street. It was a one-way street, and the horse was going against traffic in between the lanes. At a full dead gallop right down the middle of the street. And I got to give them credit. The horses were all, or the cars were all just stopping, which thank goodness that's what they did. And they were able to catch the horse. But I can see how that happened at Philadelphia. I do see how it happened.
Good story, Glenn. Awesome.
So it's not only the British.
It's not. It is Americans, too. That's not shocking. Before we get to our first guest, I want to tell you about our sponsor for the day is Back on Track. And Back on Track products are uniquely designed with a dual capacity to help prevent injury as well as ease and expedite the recovery of already present injuries. No matter what type of athlete you care for, be it an experienced campaigner or a talented young prospect, Back on Track products are essential tools you need to use maximizing athletic performance and minimizing injury and discomfort. New to the Back on Track lineup are their therapeutic exercise boots available in front and hind models. They offer excellent fit, superior protection, and they easily form a smooth, close fit with the horse's leg. The outer material is neoprene durable. The inner is lined with cotton and polyester, infused with Back on Track's revolutionary ceramic infused fiber. So you can learn more about Back on Track therapeutic exercise boots at your local retailer online. You can find out more again at backontrackproducts.com. That's backontrackproducts.com.
And a shout out to Bo, who owns Back on Track. We saw him at Equine Affair over the weekend. Got to spend a little bit of time chatting with him. So that was nice, and we'll be seeing him, of course, at Rolex, because they definitely attend Rolex. You'll find a Back on Track booth there. Well, we have our first guest on the line here, and I don't think we're talking about cheese cleaning or babies being born. We have Shauna Koresh on, who's a regular with us. She, of course, started the training method called On Target Training. And today we're going to get a little more general, and we're going to talk about something that every horse rider and owner has to deal with at some time or another with a horse, and that's spookiness. You know, I got to tell you, Shauna, you probably heard the story I was telling about the pony we used to drive, and we drove through central Philadelphia. We drove that pony through an amusement park. We did all kinds of wild stuff with that pony, and she wasn't spooky at all. One thing she didn't like was cows. If we were driving by a cow field and a cow ran up, that pony wanted to take off down the road. So every horse has something that spooks them.
Yeah, well, good morning, and it is great to be here again. Yeah, you know, it is the same thing. There's so many horses that are just solid on so many things. Like me, my old horse is one. He's solid. He's good. I went to do my first expo and took him in the indoor rings in the expo hall. Oh, he just lost his noodle. And I was like, what? I don't, you know, and it's just they all have something, it seems like. And some, unfortunately, have a lot more.
Well, and then some of them enjoy things like Jamie's.
Thanks, Glenn.
You're welcome. You don't think I'm going to be reminding you of that all the way through this show? You're crazy.
I'm trying to forget. I'm trying to put it out of my brain. I feel dirty. I need to go shower. I'll be back.
She had a romantic experience. If you didn't hear Sean at the beginning of the show, she had a romantic experience cleaning her horse's sheath the other day. She actually found one that... It was. You said you had candles and moonlight and a bottle of champagne.
I didn't know that horses liked having their sheets cleaned, okay? I didn't know, and he didn't care, and he liked it. It was gross. I'm moving on. I'm done talking to you, Glenn.
Sorry, Shauna.
You know, and it's actually kind of funny, because sometimes one of the things that really, I mean, it's one of the things I work on, teaching horses to let you handle their sheets and clean them, because some of them are real protective about that, which is really kind of a form of spookiness.
Yeah, that's a good way to bring it right back, Shauna.
Let's not
like we
it
had
go.
That planned.
Well done.
And sometimes the
well
candles
done.
Really don't work for them.
The wine worked for me.
Well, that's a good point then. Okay.
So let's say I have a spooky pony that doesn't like cow. And, you know, you don't come across cows, you know, we didn't come across cows every day in our drives where we would take our pony. So it's kind of a rare exception. It's not something you see all the time. So in that case, how do you train them to get used to cows like she was with traffic and Ferris wheels at an amusement park?
You know, and that you bring up a really, really good point, because there is I just am in the almost finished, and the next week it should be done, filming a video series on how to desensitize your horse for spookiness. And so the challenge is then, how do you come across all these things? Because when they come across, you don't plan it. You know, it catches you off guard. Otherwise, you would address it systematically and deal with it. And so the big challenge for me has been to come up with things that are just innately startling to most horses. So while you can't always see a cow, when you do see a cow, if you... You know, there's certain things you can do to help maximize that. You know, going into something familiar, not driving head on towards it, but doing a circle, kind of starting. You know, if you see that it's within 15 feet of the spooky cow, that's where they react. I will start kind of just making a circle that, you know, a nice big circle, especially if you're driving. And I will make the closest point of the circle be like 18 feet away, you know, where they're still good and still can focus. And then as they're focusing on their circle, you slowly bring that circle closer and closer and closer. And that you try to, and with the positive reinforcement, which is, you know, you can click and feed for this and tell them this is good. And I will make that task have a reinforcement history attached to it. I mean, that all sounds kind of big and technical, but it's really easy. You just, you know, as I'm riding a horse, I'll go back to the riding because that's what I do. I will, as we get closer to the object, but we're still out of that scary range, I will click and reinforce. So they start putting more focus on me and less on that because there's more value in what I'm doing. And so they start thinking, I want to do that. And it's kind of like it's like scales that are out of balance. So if they're putting too much attention onto the spooky object, there's not enough desirable or focus on the task at hand, which is, you know, remaining on your circle, bending, keeping focused on me. So the more you get to put on that side of the scale, the more they're going to choose to ignore the spooky object and to focus on the task. But also, each time as they get closest, if you reinforce as they're closest towards it, when they're calm, you know, if they're just lit up like a candle, you know, not the romantic kind, but if they're, you know, they're just lit up and worried about it, you have to look for the time when they're just a little more relaxed. So that relaxation and just focus on the task at hand becomes the thing that they choose. Because in most horses, there is some point where they're choosing what to do with that startle, you know. So as opposed to bolting and running or completely slamming on the brakes, they think, okay, I'm going to do this other task that has had a strong reinforcement history. It's something I like, and it becomes kind of a safe place for them. So that is one way that we deal with it, if you just kind of face it out of the blue. But with what I'm doing with the video...
Does that mean I have to buy a cow?
No, not yet. What I'm doing with the video is trying to... I've gone around the barn for the past, like, 3 months, just terrorizing all the horses in the barn because I keep trying to come up with things to startle them so I can film it and get them over it. So I've got these things called Giggle Buddies, and they're just toys I saw at the airport, and they're motion activated. So they're just toys that roll around on the floor and start giggling and laughing and moving. But they're quiet until something gets near it. So I have, like, I set those up for the horses to go by. So then all of a sudden it just starts moving and has a life of its own. And, you know, and so it's teaching
Jet would
them
be to, in the next county.
Well, that's kind of how, and mostly the horses I'm working are jumpers, you know. So it's not like I've got these really solid, you know, used to the whole world kind of horses. I'm dealing with horses that, you know, live in a pretty, they're just a little different, you know. They're not the you know, not
pampered.
To stereotype anybody. Yeah, so, right, so they're just a little jumpier. But, and so I set up these things where I put in water, I put little fish to go around, and I have Mint jump them, and, you know, I just do all these things. But the more, and I've seen this over and over and over again, that if you just start, and you don't start with the biggest thing like the Giggle Buddy, but you start with little things and setting them up for things to you know, I'll just put a lawn chair somewhere. I'll hang a jacket on. I'll just put a bag that's going to blow in the wind. I deal with the tarp a lot. I do things that are exercises that teaches them how to deal with things that they're afraid of and as they get or startled or unfamiliar with. And as they get familiar with them, they start, or it's not even those particular items, but they start learning that new and unusual situations, that there's something they can do. I give them something constructive to do, which is, you know, has a technical term, but we don't even need to go there. But you make it more reinforcing to do the new constructive thing to do. And then on the other hand, you're also teaching them that when they respond well to these things, that they may get reinforced. So a positive association gets built up. So when they see something new, instead of thinking, oh, no, run from it, you see them kind of deal with it. And they'll stay in place as opposed to bolting and running, or they'll even start to go up and investigate it. Beezy Madden had a jumper that was really afraid of, well, we had judgment in the water issue, which was basically a fear thing. So we got over that. But there's another one that used to just spook at the standards. And so I worked him.
That's bad if you're a jumper.
Yeah. I mean, it would just be because they, you know, they put out things that are, you know, there's killer whale standards, which are fine for me. But, you know, so he would be so busy looking at the standards, he couldn't really gauge and jump the jump appropriately. So we started, you know, just doing the systematic kind of positive reinforcement and desensitizing him to just different objects on the ground, you know, even. You don't even have to be on them to get started. And then at the down in, so her husband then said, okay, on the last day, he said, okay, BZ's on the horse. He hung a bucket on the standard on a swivel snap, and he said, BZ, leave a loose rein. And he swung the bucket so it was spinning on the standard, and on a loose rein, he walked up to it and touched it. So, I mean, so this is a horse who wouldn't get near this stuff, and at the end of a week, he was saying, okay, I'm going to go investigate this because it's worth something. So this helps him to then not be worried about it. When they're not worried about it, then you can get them to do the other things. There's a lady, too, that this was a gal who was up in Vermont, and she had an Arabian, and she would and she loved this horse, and she had it for years, but every spring as she would go out on the trail, she would end up injured. I mean, she talked about broken wrist, broken ribs, broken collarbone, and she just, and it was all with spookiness. And her horse, you know, she loved the horse. She's committed and going to get this horse through it, but she would, you know, also had a relationship with her hospital at this point. And so through the winter, she worked through these exercises where you're just hanging stuff, doing stuff, riding by stuff, and desensitizing her horse. And so that spring, she goes out on the trail, and this is our hot spot now for her, is the springtime trail ride. And the 'cause I imagine through summer, she's in a cast somewhere. So anyway, the springtime trail ride, she goes out on the trail, and she said she was going along. She went armed now with a clicker and her fanny pack, and she was ready to go. And a partridge flew out from the brush, and her horse, as opposed to running, like turning, bolting, dropping her like a cartoon character, instead, the horse just splayed all 4 feet. And so she thought, oh, that is so much better. You know, so it's still spooked because it's going to spook, but instead of it being running, it splayed all 4 feet. So she clicked it and said, that is so much better. You know, once, you know, she kind of got over that, said that's so much better, and she's reinforcing the horse. And then a second partridge flew out of the brush. And
oh, no.
As opposed to, yeah. No, but it's good. Instead of even splaying its feet, it just looked back at her like, okay, reinforcement time.
Obviously,
so, I mean,
someone did not read the lyrics to the song. It's a partridge in a pear tree, not a pair of partridges.
Not only that, now I got to buy a cow and partridges. This is becoming an expensive segment here, Sean.
But the whole point is, if you do these other exercises and teach them how to deal with spookiness, they what I found is the lessons go over to the situations where we can't predict. You know, when you come to, you know, the water they don't like, or you come to the deer or the cow.
This is going to be tough for some
those,
of us, Shauna.
It's what?
This is going to be tough for some of us. If for those of us out there who have genuinely spooky horses that are pretty much afraid of their own shadow, getting your head around training your horse to be less spooky by essentially spooking them on purpose, that's going to be tough to get started on.
Well, you know, and there's one part in the on the video. I said, okay, I'm going to hang stuff. You know, Bugs is green, so I'm riding Bugs. And you know, I'm getting back to riding after years. So, I said, okay, I'm going to hang this, you know, blowing bag on the fence. Let's go film it. And you're like, am I nutty? You know, but you just have to, because you're going out there thinking, I'm setting you up to be spooked. But he dealt with it. But the point is, I deal with these lessons actually before I even get in the saddle. You know, you can deal with them just, and you start really small. And what's kind of funny is through the video series, you don't see them spooking, because I work from the place where they're before they get super spooky. So, you know, if I set something up, like with Bugs, so when I went into the ring to ride with him, and I'd already done the lessons on the ground. So I start with the ground stuff, which helps you to be in a safer place. They're in a safer place. They also feel a little comfort with you right there. But I don't walk right up to the giggle buddy. You know, I will, you know, make the circles from further. And I don't start with the giggle buddy. You know, I may just start with a, you know, a jacket on the floor of the barn, because sometimes that is enough for horses to react to. So as they go back, if they bow on by it, I kind of ignore that and just keep walking, and then I turn around and come back. And if they're better or as they're approaching and they're still good, I reinforce there. So they, you start from a place where you're teaching them the concepts where it's still safe, and you know, you've set yourself up for success. And I do things like I make sure that they're not the, it's not first thing in the morning. They're usually turned out right now, and they're going to be super fresh. I turn them out, let them have their time, and do things that can help optimize their reaction. And then as they get a reinforcement history built up with the new objects and the new reaction to things or lack of reaction, the relaxation around things, they get better and better and better. But so as I go in the ring with bugs, this is kind of an example, and I think, okay, I've tied that bag blowing in the fence on the ring over there. I don't go right up to it. I start and just go, okay, we're just going to do our familiar sessions down here at this end of the ring. And we're going to, you know, walk in our circle, you know, bending and ignoring and head down and everything that I want, whatever it is I've worked on him to do. And then moved my circle closer and closer and closer until we were right up to the bag. And because you start there, and I'd reinforce him as he was good along the way and then work for a while and then move up to the trot and the canter. And then as we're going and getting closer to it, you know, I went back down to the trot and the walk. And so he didn't have a reaction, but I come from the place where you want the good reaction. So through the video, a lot of times you don't see the horses overly reacting, and yet I'm dealing with the spookiest horses ever, horses who have to be walked with lip chains, you know, because they are, there's, can be so fresh if they get spooked. It's rearing and bolting. And pretty quick, you know, I just have a loose rein and a target. Or, you know, a loose lead rope and a target, because the target is their focus, which the target is it's what we used at SeaWorld, and it's something that helps set them up to succeed. So it's just a marine fishing net float on a two-foot dowel. So it's just a handheld something that I've taught them to touch their nose to. So it just helps them to focus, you know, and as you're getting closer to an object, you just go target. And they think, oh, I know that target. I love the target. I'm afraid of that object, but if I just touch the target. And when they do, you click and reinforce. Again, it shifts their focus from the object to the target. So you work from a place where you are not going right out and facing their darkest fears, but you build up to that. But by the time, and so through the video, you don't see, because I work from a place of, yes, I start from far away, I get their focus. You don't see huge reactions over and over. You know, you learn how to do it where you're minimizing all that chaos that comes with.
Shauna, our horse speaker's target is the jacket pocket where we keep the treats. That seems to be the focus of the pocket. And I can see it now. Jamie's going to be calling you saying, can you send me one of those things? I need one for Glenn every morning during the show to keep him on focus.
Focus, Glenn, focus. Come on, back to the target. I'll give you a cookie.
It works on humans.
It does work on humans.
That's awesome. That's good to learn just for your husbands.
It's true. It's not animal behavior. It's just behavioral psychology. And these are proven principles, you know. So I'm just taking what's been in textbooks and what I did at SeaWorld and putting them to the horses. But, and you know, and I also, I think a really good point is it also works really well with the traditional training. So it's not like you have to throw out everything you know. You can use it in you know, correlation with what you're already doing with your horses. So it's not, doesn't have to be a throw out one for the other. It just blends really nicely with what we already do traditionally.
Well, that's terrific. I think that, you know, obviously the way you're doing it is terrific. And Jennifer said she's actually seen a couple of the videos. Where can people find those? So if they want to take a look at them, they can.
Okay, it'll be coming out probably in 1 week, two at the most. But the best thing to do would be go to my website, which is shaunakarish.com, and you can sign up and on the newsletters. And when it is all said and done, we're just at the final editing stages, I'll be sending out little snippets of videos and little tips and tell you a little bit more about the videos and how to get to find out more about them as we move along.
Okay, cool. So that's ShaunaKaresh.com, and you also have a Facebook page, so they can find you on Facebook as well. And on Facebook, it's something different, though. What is it on Facebook?
It is Ask Shauna on Target Training. Or if you put in horse trainer, I think it comes up. But, yeah, Ask Shauna.
Okay, just ask Shauna on there. Well, this is great. Yeah. I really appreciate you joining us again. Hold on. Jennifer wants to talk to you off the air for a second.
Okay.
And we'll look forward to having you back again.
It was great to be here. I love talking with you guys. It's a great way for me to wake up.
All right, good. I appreciate it. Next, can you do a sheath cleaning next time, or are we good on that now?
No, we're good on that. I'm just not sure it'd be very comfortable for everybody.
All right. And I thought Wednesday was supposed to be my uncomfortable day. Ah! All right, thanks, Shauna.
Thank you.
Well, that's Shauna Koresh. And, you know, today's daily song is brought to you by FeedXL. One of the things that we worry about is whether we're feeding our horses correctly. And you can find out if you're doing that correctly. It's very simple. It's very easy just by going to FeedXL.com. It'll take you a couple minutes to put in some information about your horse and what type of horse you have and all that. And then it takes you a couple minutes to put in information about what you're feeding your horse. And this is from hay to grain, what kind of grain, what brand of grain, to all the supplements that you feed. And FeedXL takes all that information, crunches it down, and spits out some very interesting reports that show you whether you're feeding too much of this or too little of that, whether you're too heavy in one supplement or one vitamin and too light in another. And it takes all that into consideration. It was put together by some doctors of nutrition in Australia. It's a terrific program. Check it out. If you haven't gone there yet, take some time today to do it. It's at feedxl.com. And I thought it was appropriate with today that we play a little Tempe. This is one we haven't played before. We are all on our way somewhere. And I just thought of that horse running down the street in Philadelphia. He was on his way somewhere.
We're all on our way somewhere, headed down some different roads. It's easy to get lost out there. We don't always find our way back home. Sometimes life ain't fair. We're all on our way somewhere. We're all doing the best we can. Sometimes that's the hardest thing to do. We all need a helping hand to pick us up, to pull us through. When we can't find the strength to stand, we're all doing the best we can. They're not the same. Me, I've lived through some living hell. But when I'm still dealing with the pain, but I'm feeling better than I've ever felt. We all got our own story to tell.
And that is Templeton Thompson. You can check out all her music at templetonthompson.com. We are all on our way somewhere. I am Jamie Jennings here with Glenn the Geek, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning, brought to you today by backontrackproducts.com. You can go check them out there. Their stuff is actually pretty amazing. And, of course, this time every week we have thehorse.com that comes on, and it's Christy, usually with some special guests, and today is no different. She has today with her Katie Watts. And first of all, let me say good morning to Christy. How are you?
I'm great. And yourself?
Oh, doing fine. A Laminitis month. I like to call it Laminitis Awareness Month. Is that okay?
I think that's awesome.
Okay, Laminitis Awareness Month continues here on the Horse Radio Network. And apparently you're not going to gross Glenn out again. I did enough of that talking about sheath cleaning. So why don't you tell us what you're going to talk about and introduce your guest, Katie.
Hey, Christy, we are the only morning show in the world that can spend an hour and a half talking about sheath cleaning.
I just think that's awesome.
It's special. It's
and
special.
I regret that I've been on the phone a little bit this morning and missed it. I'm going to have to catch the archive version.
Yeah, you're going to go to the very beginning of the show. You're going to want to hear that part.
Good time.
Absolutely. Well,
good
and
time.
I want you to enjoy your reprieve from gross because it's coming back in a couple of weeks with a vengeance. I
got enough watching that baby being born last night on that website that Jamie told me about yesterday that I had to go there.
I think we can do better.
Yes, girl. Yes, I like it.
And I'm just sorry that we can't put video on the radio show, but we can link to it afterwards in the show notes, right? All right, so on to what we're actually talking about today. We wanted to talk a little bit about grass and hay and laminitis because, you know, more and more horses in this country and in a lot of other places are overweight and have metabolic problems. And we're going to talk a little bit more about those metabolic problems specifically next week. But this week, we're going to talk about what you can do about feeding those horses because they do tend to be susceptible to problems like laminitis. And the pasture grasses and some of the hay grasses in all over the place have been developed, you know, bred and engineered for weight gain in other livestock species in a lot of cases. And they're not really so good for a horse that has metabolic problems. So I wanted to bring Katie on to talk to us a little bit about those grasses because Katie has had, you know, some metabolically susceptible horses in her lifetime, and she is extremely passionate about what they eat, taking a look at what they eat because this is her field. She's a crop consultant. She's a researcher. She literally watch her horses graze out in the field. They get a little bit sore. She'll run out and grab handfuls of what they've been eating, send it off to the lab, and see what its sugar content is. She's extremely knowledgeable about this. She's probably one of the few non-veterinarians to be published in the veterinary literature on this topic. So, Katie, thanks so much for joining us today. Talk to us a little bit about what are some of the signs of horses that are susceptible, metabolically susceptible. We'll start with that, and then we'll go into the grass.
Okay. When I lecture, a lot of people have this misconception that I'm anti-grass. I think grass is the perfect food for horses. It's just certain horses that we need to be careful about. Most horses can eat grass in any kind of weather all day long with impunity. I wish I had one. First of all, we need to talk about what horses that need to have their intake restricted this time of year. You can pretty much, if you know the signs, you can tell by looking. Of course, the obese horses are at risk, but even horses that are in a fairly lean body condition because they've been properly managed for metabolic syndrome still have these subtle signs of a slightly crusty neck, or they might have a little bit of fat pad around the shoulder, over the loin, maybe some dimples in their butt. And these are the ones that we really need to be careful for. And of course, they will tend to have some rings in their feet. And the other thing that we need to be very mindful of is these very subtle changes in their soundness. I literally make my ponies trot whenever I open the gate to turn them out in the morning because they're big moving ponies that do dressage. And if they start walking, if they start trotting like a Western pleasure horse, or if they start doing this exaggerated heel first landing and flipping their toes, then I start to worry, and I will bring them back in. So we really need to get mindful, watch these horses, and if they do have these metabolic tendencies, the fat pads and actually the hardness in their crest can change literally from one day to the next. So rather than sit around worrying, you just check. And I get into the habit of feeling my pony's neck literally every day and checking for changes in hardness and size.
So what do you find that if the crest is getting a little bit harder, you need to worry more or less?
You need to worry more if the neck gets harder or bigger.
Okay.
Or you see now, more of this. Sometimes their neck almost gets corrugated looking, and the places where that individual horse puts on fat pads, it's a different kind of fat. It's kind of lumpy,
kind of like a cellulite that we all dread, and you know, women, we all have it. We can't help it, you know. So that when your horse's neck starts to look like the back of your thigh, then that's when you have to worry about them. Now, I just want to point out metabolic diseases. When you talk about that, give us some examples. Like when you talk about metabolic diseases, are you talking about cushionoid horses, laminitic horses? Can you give us a better example?
Okay, this is mostly about insulin resistance. And, of course, insulin resistance is a standalone condition in some horses, mostly ponies, a lot of gated horses, Icelandics, Norwegian fjord horses. It's a natural genetic tendency. Then obesity can cause insulin resistance all on its own. And then some horses with Cushing's, which they prefer to call pituitary pars intermedia dysfunction, may or may not be insulin resistant depending on what part of their pituitary is damaged. There are some horses with PPID that are not insulin resistant yet or may never be, and those seem to be able to graze with impunity. So you're always back to looking at the individual horse and how it reacts and being very mindful and vigilant and really staying on top of it during this time of the year when the sugar in the grass is especially high.
Now let's talk a little bit about that. Why at this time of the year is the grass higher in sugar?
Because it's cold. Because it's cold at night, and it's sunny during the daytime.
Why is that the case?
Well, it goes back to, it's not rocket science. You know, we all forgot our ninth and tenth grade biology. We got to remember that photosynthesis makes sugar out of carbon dioxide and sunlight and water, and that is the raw material that grass uses to grow everything else. After the grass makes sugar, it turns it into protein, turns it into fiber, turns it into energy for growth. Well, if it's very, very cold at night, the enzymes that help the grass grow cannot function properly. So if it's below 40 degrees Fahrenheit or 5 degrees centigrade, the grass cannot grow. So it has all these raw materials that it made the day before, but it can't use them because it's too cold at night. So under the conditions when it's sunny during the day and cold at night, the sugar will gradually build up in grass because it can't use the sugars to grow. It's still sitting in the sun every day. It's still creating photosynthesis, is still creating sugar. The plant just can't use it. So under these kind of conditions, like if you had two solid weeks of beautiful sunny days with not a cloud in the sky and near freezing temperatures every night, then you're going to get a situation where the grass in your pasture, even though it looks the same and your horses are eating the same thing, the sugar concentration could double or triple in a three-week period of time.
I think that's important for people to realize, is that just what you just said, that the grass can look the same or it can even look very stressed and still be very, very high in sugar. I think a lot of times people think that if the grass or their hay looks kind of rotten, then it must be low in sugar. And actually, I think the opposite is true sometimes, isn't it?
Yeah, I used to think I could tell by looking, but I can't, because every time I've tested a gazillion samples of grass, and I can't tell by looking. I have a whole hour lecture on why I hate that lush word. Everybody says lush grass, and frankly, I don't know what that means. People have a tendency to think that if it's brown or if it isn't attractive or if it isn't bright green, then it's safe, and that it doesn't really matter. The other thing that is operating during this time of year is a lot of people with horse pastures have them overgrazed. A lot of paddocks are considered turnout areas where they're really more like playpens than a pasture for them to get significant part of their diet. So this time of year, they're probably overgrazed. They're probably muddy. People look out from the kitchen window and say, oh, shoot, there's nothing out there to eat. And so they don't even think about pulling their high-risk horses off. And so they turn the herd out there, and the herd is keeping it grazed down to the dirt. During this period of time when the growth rate is increasing, there's a whole lot more grass growing out there, but if the horses are keeping it grazed down to the dirt, they can be doubling their intake rate, but the pasture still looks the same. And so if your pasture is overgrazed, and I know people sometimes purposely do this because they see grass as the enemy, and they don't want their horse to have grass, so they think that grazing it down to the dirt is a good thing. But this time of year, that grass is growing like crazy. And if your horses continue to graze it down to the dirt, you have no idea how much your horses are eating.
Jamie just had little convulsions because she, out in Phoenix, she lays down and praises the grass when it grows. she has a little monument set up to growing grass. So I'm sure she just had little convulsions right there.
I sing to it every morning.
If you want to see how fast your grass is growing, then make an exclosure. This is what grass researchers do to compare grazed versus ungrazed. Put four panels out there, or put a tiny little fence out there, and so where your horses can't get to it, and then you can actually see how fast your grass is growing. And
Again, I live in, the desert, Phoenix, Arizona, and I actually have planted a tree trying to grow some shade, and the third tree after the horses started eating that, I had to put some panels around the tree, and yes, there is some growth inside there. No, it's not impressive, so I think I'm okay, but I know what you're talking about with most people because, especially like where Glenn and Jennifer live in Lexington, Kentucky, I mean, you look at that grass, the horse does and they get fat. So, and potentially, I mean, I know that Jennifer's horse wears a muzzle all day long because he just can't have that kind of food.
No.
Yeah.
Bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
poor baby.
Something that I wanted us to talk about, which is, okay, we've got a lot of grass growing. It's spring. What can people do to try, if they've got some of these susceptible horses, what can they do to try and make that pasture safer for their horses? Or maybe they just need to take the horses off. except for certain times.
Well, I spent the last 8 years. See, I spent an incredible amount of money on planting these. I have an acre of irrigated grass paddock with underground sprinklers and a computer time clock and all this expensive fencing. And I went to a whole lot of trouble to set up a system where I should be able to feed my ponies for 6 months out of the year.
There must be a 12-step program for that. I just say it.
Yeah. And so now I've got this grass that my ponies can't eat. And it really pisses me off. And so I'm just like bending over backwards trying to find ways that I can manage this grass so that my ponies can actually eat it. I'm a very stubborn woman. Or I wouldn't have done all of this.
You're honest,
you know what?
Though.
So let me just recommend something to you. Well, you're a little grass obsessed. You have, you know, probably need to take some medication. And you know what? Get some dang thoroughbreds or something and quit worrying about it so much.
You have to go and get insulin resistant ponies. Well, do you have a pony that has chronic laminitis and can only eat grass an hour a day?
Do I have
you
that?
Know,
no.
Yeah. I think you're really cheap.
I think a couple of big percherons ought to do the trick. That'll help you out. Now, this is all good points, though, and it's something I love the point that I hadn't really thought about it that way before. I love the point you made about the dry lot, quote-unquote dry lot, that people think their horses aren't getting anything to eat. And being a horse husband, I've probably been guilty of that, saying, Jennifer, why do we have to put the muzzle on already? There's nothing out there. And that's a very good point. Yeah.
Good girl, Jennifer.
Yeah.
And boy, Peter's playing it for all it's worth, too. To talk about sad faces when I go out there. Oh, man, is he giving me a guilt trip.
They don't need eyebrows.
Okay.
That looks.
I hear this a lot, and ponies have really developed this look, you know, where mommy, you know, mommy, the mommy dearest look.
Yes.
I first foundered my ponies on hay, and when I figured this all out and I found some hay that was low in sugar, I took away their high sugar hay and gave them this low sugar hay, and they peed on it. And I said, well, just tough, you know, and it took them about 3 days before they would taste it. But they would not eat it in my presence.
Katie, you have the best delivery of lines. You definitely do.
but it would disappear overnight. So
uh-huh.
It took literally, this hay that saved their lives, it literally took them a full week before they would eat it in my presence, and they would eat it in significant quantities that I was no longer concerned about them starving to death. And this is a really big problem for a lot of people. The pony eyebrows are, you know, we just cave in. Oh, poor baby.
Yeah.
Time for tough love this time of year. And going back to the management, you know, I've done all of these things. You mow, you rotationally graze, I created artificial shade, fertilize, unfertilize, and I can make some progress on lowering the concentration of sugar in my paddocks. But I cannot overcome the effects of cold temperature. When it's cold at night, there's nothing I can do managing my pasture to get the sugar concentration low enough for a high-risk animal to graze. So you just got to get them off during this time of year when it's cold at night. And mm-hmm. let's remember, this is not just about spring grass. It's about cold grass. It happens in the fall again.
Okay.
Spring and fall. The bottom line is, you know, you just got to restrict intake or get them off.
Gotcha. And that's just the kind of tough love, you know. It's like you wish you could kill them with kindness, but you just can't. And you would if you let them graze, and especially, you know, insulin-resistant ponies. So we do appreciate everything. Unfortunately, we're going out of time. I'm sure we could talk about this for hours, and you guys are just so funny. Yes, horses will pee on the hay, but they'll also eat dirt. So eventually they will come around to eating the not-so-good-tasting, low-sugar hay, as proven by your ponies. So we do appreciate you being on, Katie, so much. And where can people find out more about you?
Okay, my website is safergrass.org, O-R-G. And it's not safe grass, it's safer grass, because as I pointed out, I can make it safer, but I can't make it completely safe.
Right.
And
you must have every leftover from the 60s finding your website and being very disappointed.
Well, guess so.
Safer grass.
They're a little confused.
You get a lot of hits that are not for the purpose intended.
It's not medical grade marijuana, people. It's safergrass.org.
Yeah. And if they want to learn more about this, I've got some presentation CDs on there. They're one-hour lectures where I explain all this plant physiology, and there's another CD on holistic management, you know, of the metabolically challenged horses. A lot of people say they listen to them over and over and over again, and because a lot of these concepts are counterintuitive. But this is all based on science. You know, I've got 24 kinds of grass and replicated plots in my backyard. So, you know, this is all scientifically based.
Okay, fantastic. Safergrass.org. Thank you, Katie. And as obviously, thank you, Christy, so much. Everybody go to thehorse.com and you can read all about it. And since it is Laminitis Awareness Month, thehorse.com/laminitis, correct?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
All right,
thanks,
Christy.
Guys.
Well,
bye,
Katie.
I have some articles on Katie's work on there as well, and they'd be under our hay category.
Okay,
great.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. This half hour is sponsored by Equestrian Collections. Equestrian Collections is the place that you want to go to find all of your spring wear, whether that's for you, your horse, your kids, your horse husband. You can find it all at EquestrianCollections.com. And for the listeners of the Horse Radio Network, they have a special coupon that will get you $10 off your next order of $120 or more. And that is Radio Show. You just go when you're checking out on the coupon code spot, you put in Radio Show, all one word, and they'll give you $10 off your next order of $120 or more. And that's from Equestrian Collections. They have over 300 different brands to choose from. You're going to find a huge selection there. So no matter what you're looking for the spring or for the show season that's coming up, you can find it at EquestrianCollections.com. Well, guys, there's something that we didn't plan on the show, but I just texted her to find out if she was free, and I want to give her a call. Remember we talked about the fact that we were going to call Tony, Darcy's boyfriend, for his birthday, and then I remembered there was also a story that Darcy needs to tell us about, and she said she'd be around, so we're going to try and call her live on the air here. Let's see if this works.
Good luck.
Okay, good. We'll find out if this works or not. And I think we're ringing.
Hello.
She answers. Hey, Darcy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
This is Jamie, Jennifer, and Glenn, and you're live on the air, so don't say anything bad about me. Wait till later.
Okay, I'll wait.
Let me tell a little story. Darcy is deathly afraid of snakes, and she was so, so very excited when she started leasing a new barn about 2 months ago. We talked about the fact that we helped you move in there and everything. She was so excited about that. And one of the things she was most excited about was that this new barn, because the old one didn't, had a bathroom, has actually a place to go to the bathroom, a toilet, a sink, an actual heated bathroom. And then last week happened. So tell us about it, because I haven't heard the story directly from you yet, Darcy.
Oh, that's funny. Well, if you come to the barn, everybody that's come to the barn has heard the story. They come in the door, and I'm like, did you hear about it? So.
Well, tell us.
Well, last Saturday, I got a new toilet, a new sink. I'm getting ready to paint the walls pink. Like, it was really coming together. And one of my boarders went to use the bathroom and pulled the lid up, and there was a big snake in the toilet.
Oh, my God.
I am petrified of snakes, like off the charts petrified, like Jen can tell you.
We are 5 miles away, and I heard her screaming from here. It was,
in the toilet, like in the water and everything?
Well, yeah, like he was coming up, you know, and somehow got in the pipe, and it's not a little guy. I called a guy named Slash to come get him. And
appropriate.
He thought he was about 4 feet long, and we can't find him.
Oh, snap.
So,
I'd be out. I got to move.
Well,
I'm sorry.
He pretty much thought I was going to move.
We got a picture that we're going to post on our Facebook page. Darcy sent us a picture of the snake in the toilet. And she's right. This is not a small snake. Now, what kind did he say it was?
Well, there's a little dispute on the kind of snake. Slash, who was thought it was kind of funny, I was so scared. He's like, you're not going back in your barn, are you? Ha ha.
She hasn't been to the barn since.
No, I have. I just walk in with a hammer and make loud noises. So, I know. And the Slash is like, you're in Kentucky. What do you expect? You know, but I am still not cool with this.
Have you gone to the bathroom in the barn since?
No.
No, I didn't think you would. You'd be holding it forever.
No, it's going back to peeing in the stall. You girls got to do what a girl's got to do. I'm with you, sister. I would never be able to go in there again and go to the bathroom in there. Now, see, what that reminded me of is when I used to have HBO, and I would flip through the channels and see what the movies were. And accidentally, one time, I stumbled upon the movie Snakes on a Plane. Now, would I watch this movie ever? No. But I'm flipping through, and it's Snakes on a Plane. And how did I know it was Snakes on a Plane? Because there was a man that was going to the bathroom in the plane, and a snake came out of the toilet and bit him on the you-know-what. And then I changed the channel, and I've never been able to think about anything else when I go into a bathroom on an airplane.
I don't think this is helping.
Yeah.
One of my boarders, who's too brave for her own good, took her shedding blade and pinned his head down. And she was talking to me on the phone. She's like, well, I'm going to pin his head down and grab him. And I was like, leave him be. I'm calling somebody. I mean, and she's like, oh, I scraped skin off. And then he came after me. And I was like, close the lid. Yeah.
She made him mad.
She did. She's like, well, I ticked him off. And, well, we flushed the toilet probably 5 or 6 times, and then Slash came, and he flushed the toilet about 4 or 5 times, and we couldn't find him, and he said he's beneficial, but I don't think he's beneficial at all, and I want him gone. So.
Now, I thought that the pattern on him in the picture looked like he had sort of a diamond pattern on him, which would indicate a poisonous snake. Slash thought he was just a rat snake, right?
Yeah, Slash said that just, I guess, to calm my nerves, because I've been on Google, and, you know, Google has got all the good stuff, and it looks like a cottonmouth.
Yeah.
And it was in the pipes, too, so that could be, because those snakes like water. So if it is not a poisonous snake, I will go ahead and tell you that you should definitely keep it around, because they actually are so territorial that they keep poisonous snakes away. So they're actually good snakes to have. I mean, if I had a rat snake on my property or saw one, I would pick it up. Somebody would pick it up and put it in my yard, because they keep rattlesnakes away. They keep really bad snakes away. However, the idea of still having a snake in my yard would freak me out anyway.
Let alone in the toilet.
In the toilet would be worse.
That you saw a rattlesnake? Didn't that happen to you a little while ago?
Oh, yeah, I was driving my gator through the desert. We take the puppies out there, and one puppy's on one side of the gator, one was on the other, and I looked ahead. Chad was driving and ran directly over a rattlesnake. And the thing is, it coiled up when it went underneath the tires, and we didn't see it because we were looking back at the puppies. We're like, come on, guys. I turned around. I screamed like an octave that I didn't know that my vocal cords could hit. And by the time we turned around and saw it, if we had hit it, we were going like 20 miles an hour on this trail. By the time we turned around, we didn't hurt him. We just made him very angry. And he had that like coiled at the bottom, head straight up in the air, you know, bent. The little neck was sticking out, and his rattle was going like a million miles an hour. So I was like, drive, go.
Yeah,
I think it was horrible. So, yeah, and now I'm scared to ride my horse in the desert. And I've got, you know, 10,000 acres of desert in my front yard, and I'm scared to go.
Oh, isn't that awful? Like, I'm scared to go in my own barn now. It's just...
Hey, guys, before we run out of time, there was something we were going to do at the beginning of the show, but we decided to give him an extra hour and a half of sleep. And that is, your boyfriend, Tony, has a birthday today, right?
He does. He's actually sitting here with me.
Ah, we can't surprise him then.
Oh, I think he just did. He's like three shades of red.
Well, happy birthday, Tony. We were going to call him earlier in the day, but we didn't want to. Jamie wouldn't let me because she felt bad that he hadn't slept enough. So she was feeling bad.
Yeah,
he had
for about 2:30, so. But that's because he was at work, not partying.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing the snake story with us, and happy birthday, Tony.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Good luck. Help you find it and get it out
in
of your
barn.
Toilet.
Oh, I'll post it on Facebook. Don't worry.
All right, we'll post a picture of that in our show notes when we're done with the show here, so everybody can see the snake in Darcy's toilet. See you guys.
No, Glenn. I got to tell you, it's a good thing that the plumber that was installing the toilet didn't find it in the pipes as he was installing it, because that poor guy would have been out of a job. He probably never would have been able to plumb a toilet ever again, whoever he or she was. Could you imagine? Like, oh, I'm just going to reach in here. My brother's a plumber. He would literally have to quit. He would have to move on to a different profession.
I love it. You're funny.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Oh, that,
I remember
I
he had to crawl under a house one time and saw a dead rat, and the man now freaks out every time he has to crawl underneath a house. And that's kind of a big job when you're a plumber.
Yeah, it is. Jennifer used to be an electrician. She used to work with her dad and electrician's helper, and she had some interesting places she had to crawl around too. And to this day, she doesn't like spiders very much at all.
Not a spider gal.
No. Well, this has been a very fun show, guys. What a great day.
Well,
so
I'm glad
fun.
You had a good time. I'm glad you got to laugh at the expense of me and Darcy. So that's good. That's great.
You know, for
it was a great
on a Wednesday,
you.
It wasn't me getting grossed out. I love it. Hey, it was very good. Very good. Very good. And we have some stories we didn't get to today that I want to talk about tomorrow. And I want to tell everybody that we are going to be talking tomorrow with a person that works at Three Chimneys Farm here in Lexington, who also took a pretty magnificent adventure in another part of the world, and it involved horses. So we're going to be hearing another adventure story. We love our adventure stories. So she's going to be with us tomorrow. And, of course, we have the Chronicle Report. And we also can tell you how you can get one of the most special drinks for the Kentucky Derby. And let's just say that this special drink includes ice made of rainwater captured in the pristine island of Tasmania, Australia. No, I'm not kidding. And that'll be on tomorrow's show. But you can also find out all of our shows. Tack and Habit's now live. We have this week's episode out. You can go listen to us talk about a couple of cool products, and you can find that. The best socks ever. Helena absolutely loves them for underneath your paddock boots and your tall boots. You can find that at tackandhabit.com, or find all of our shows at horseradionetwork.com. And we'll be posting the snake picture in the toilet very shortly on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. And, of course, we're on Twitter at Horse Radio.
I would like to point out, Glenn, that it is the countdown has begun. We are looking at 15 days, people. 15 days, about 15 days exactly until the first horse goes out on dressage there in Lexington, Kentucky, for the Rolex Kentucky three-day event. I'm lighting my candles and, you know, lighting one a day, counting down until we get to the 15th candle. Rolex begins. It's a big big ceremony here. So anyway, 15 days to go. If you missed the live show, you can listen to the recorded version on our website, affiliate websites, iTunes. You don't have to miss an episode. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 Eastern. Goodbye, everybody. Say goodbye, Glenn.
Goodbye, everybody. Please, when you go to the bathroom, lift the lid and look first. Be safe. Maybe wear your helmet.